The Motley Fool, to educate, amuse and enrich.
This is Money Talk, the weekly investing podcast from The Motley Fool. I am David Kuo, and today I'm joined by a man who I never tire of talking to because he is down to earth, down with the boys, and he's a downright decent chap because he set up the Buffy the Vampire Slayer phone line in 1997 with Sky. He is with me now, and I'm glad to say he is fully clothed because we do have women in the office. And if you haven't already guessed, he is Robbie Burns, and he's going to give us the lowdown on spread betting.
Down with the boys.
Down with the boys.
God, my wife doesn't listen to this. So that was a secret you've been keeping from me for all these years.
So anyway, welcome back to Money Talk, Robbie.
It was like it was yesterday I was here.
I think it was only yesterday that you were here. Yes. Yeah, that podcast that we did the last time is still very, very popular today.
Oh, is it? Oh,
yes.
Great. Oh, that's good news.
I know.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's start from the very, very top and get you to explain what spread betting is all about.
Spread betting. Well, it's something I've used since 1998, 1999. And I suppose in effect, you're instead of buying shares in the market, you're in effect having a bet with a bookie instead. So it's a bit like instead of buying £1,000 worth of Vodafone, you're nipping down to your local William Hill and you're saying to your bookmaker, I want to buy £1,000 worth of Vodafone. They say, fine, it's 62p to buy. We're going to charge you 63p instead of 62. But the great thing is you're not going to have to pay tax on any winnings like you might have to. And you can also bet on it to go down if you want. We don't care. If you want to bet on Vodafone share price to go down, bet on it to go down, bet on it to go up. And it doesn't cost you any commission or any money apart from that little extra spread you pay. So a very powerful tool.
You make it sound very simple. And what you're saying is that you are betting that a price will either be higher or lower than the current price. If you get it right, you win. If you get it wrong, you lose.
It's a bit, exactly. It's a bit like that Bruce Forsyth. Was it Play Your Cards
Play Your Cards Right, yes.
Are you going higher or are you going lower? That's the kind of thing. That's right.
Okay. Now, yeah, that sounds pretty simple. So what are the dangers?
Wow. Well, I guess an analogy might be normal share trading is a bit like, it's quite straightforward. You're driving a Ford Mondeo. Do they still run undercars? Is it still a Ford Mondeo? But now this is a Ferrari you're looking at. So with spread betting, you need to be careful about how much you press the pedal. The biggest danger with spread betting is they kind of lend you money. So if you say you've got £1,000 and you put it with your spread betting firm, they say to you, Robbie, you've £1,000, go off. You can bet on, you can have £8,000 or £10,000 worth of shares on that £1,000. Which is called leverage, is the jargon. What it actually means is it's a bit like taking out a bookmaker's credit card. So you put your £1,000 in, but what happens if you've only got £3,000 in your bank account and suddenly you owe the bookmaker £6,000? That's what you have to be careful with using the leverage. So I would say to people, do spread bet, but don't use up very much the leverage. Only bet with what you can actually afford. Because if you bought your Vodafone or whatever with a normal share account, it's, you know, you're only going to lose your £1,000. But if Vodafone goes down a lot with a spread bet, because it's pounds per point, you can actually lose more than you've got in your account.
So what you're saying is there are dangers involved in it.
Oh, definite dangers. And
you can actually lose more than your stake money. Unlike a bookie, for instance, where if you put a £10 bet on the Grand National, all you lose is £10.
Exactly. But I suppose if you say £10 a point with a spread bet, it's not £10. You could lose £800 or £1,000 or almost unlimited with a spread bet firm. So that's where you have to be very careful. And you have to understand what you're doing. That's the main thing. Before you go into it, do a lot of reading and understand the dangers, which hopefully my new book on spread betting will sort of lay that out for you.
Now, this is where I have a small bone to pick with you, Robbie, because when you wrote your first book, The Naked Trader, you extolled the virtues of buying shares for the reasonably long term. Now, you've done an about-face. Now, for a naked person to do an about-face, well, it's not a very pleasant sight. Why have you written the book about spread betting and encouraging people to go in and start betting money on something where they could lose more than their shirt?
Ah, well, there's other layers to this, and that actually, this is where, if you're very careful, you don't have to lose your shirt, because the spread firms have something called a guaranteed stop loss. So say your share's £1 and you decide, I don't want to lose more than a certain amount, so I don't want to lose my whole £1,000. You say to the bookie, if Vodafone shares go down to 80p, it's sold. I'm out of there. It's gone. Actually, a better example would be last week. There's a share called Desire Petroleum, which nearly every single private punter in the whole world seemed to be on. Why? Because, of course, it goes down a lot. And it went down from 35p to 15p overnight, which is quite a percentage drop.
Correct.
Maths. Now, if you had this bet with a spread bet firm and you'd said you had a guaranteed stop loss at 30, even though the shares went from 35 to 15p, you'd have been out at 30p, even though the shares weren't at 30p ever. So you'd have only lost your 20% or whatever. You wouldn't have lost the whole stakes. In fact, if you're really, really clever and you understand stop losses, in fact, your losses aren't unlimited with a spread bet firm, as long as you use that either as stop loss. But this would be a guaranteed stop loss. There is a bit of a charge for that. So when you put your guaranteed stop loss on, they charge you a little bit more on the spread. So you pay a little bit more for your bet when you put it on. But you're guaranteed out, which I think is quite nice, especially if you're new spread bettors.
So what you're saying is that stop losses are a bit like a seatbelt in a car. You put the seatbelt on, and if the car were to jerk forward, you're not going to bang your head against the windscreen.
Well, the guaranteed stop loss, yes, it's guaranteed. They'll guarantee to take you out at that specified price.
So how tightly should you be tying the seatbelt to make sure that you, first of all, don't bump your head, but at the same time, your journey isn't entirely uncomfortable?
Do you know what? That's a really good question. I'm very impressed. That is a very good question. You're absolutely quite right, because if you set your seatbelt too loose or too tight, because you're right, say you had your bet on Desire Petroleum and you bought Desire Petroleum at 35p and you put your stop loss on at only 32p, well, you know shares go up and down quite a lot. You'd probably get stopped out, so you'd lose, but the share could go back up again, which wouldn't be so good. And at 8 o'clock in the morning with the stock market, the spread between the buy and sell price can be very wide, and that's when a lot of people get taken out on their stops. So there's a kind of art to where to place your stop loss. It should be far enough away so you don't get hit by a little bit of volatility in the share, but not too far away, because it's pointless having the stop loss in the first place. So what I suggest to people is it should be at the very least 10% away from the price you're in. You should take a look and see how volatile is the stock you're in. Is it a really volatile FTSE 100 stock? Just have a look at the chart. When does it tend to stop falling and set it a little bit below that so you're not stopped out? Otherwise, you'll get stopped out all the time. You'll gradually lose all your money. So there's a great art to it, and that's something you're quite right. You should look at your stop loss every time. But the beauty of stop losses is you can move them. So the other thing is you can lock in a profit. So say you bought Desire at 35. You set your original stop loss at 30. Now Desire goes to 50p. You think, right, I'm going to move my stop loss up. You push your stop loss up to 40, you're now guaranteed a profit, because if it falls down to 40, you'll be out of profit. And this is what I do with my bigger shares. I gradually move the stop loss as the share price goes up. And you're talking about, interestingly enough, short term. You think spread betting is for the shorter term. Well, actually, on some spread bets, I've been in them for nearly a year and a half, 2 years. For example, Aggreko, which I think we talked about last time.
We did. That's done exceedingly well.
I think I bought it on a spread bet at about £7. It's now 16. I still have the spread bet open. I just raised my stop losses now at 12, I think. I just gradually raise the stop loss up, and I've got no problem with holding that spread bet open for a long time. And one recent one, very nice one for me, was Nestor Healthcare, which got bid for. I bought it at 30p on a spread bet, got bid for at 110, and I held it all the way through. And just raised the stop loss gently up underneath the price. So I look on spread betting as a potential tool for longer-term trading, as well as shorter-term. The only downside of that is there's a little bit of cost in holding a spread bet open. It's not very much. With Nestor Healthcare, it's something like 40p a day for every weekday. So over a year, even that didn't mount up to that much.
So you're giving an example of two shares, Aggreko and Nestor Healthcare, as shares that you've gone long on. Are there any Correct. Shares that you've gone short on?
Yes. Now, I do treat shorts, short, I suppose we should say, is jargon for betting on a share to go down. I don't know what a short is. You think, this company's not very good enough. I think it's going to go down. And my favourite short over the last year, I'll tell you exactly why I thought it was a great short, was something I thought I was going to buy, which was a new issue called Betfair, because Betfair is a betting company. I don't know if you bet on horses, you can bet against horses. It's a great company. I thought, it's a fantastic company. Everybody loves Betfair. I'm going to buy it, and it was going to come on the market. But I looked at it, and the valuation when it came on the market was 1.5 billion. I looked at how much profit it was making, 18 million. And that might go to 40 million. I thought, hang on a minute, that's pretty low profit to what it's worth, and it was valued at £15 a share. So I shorted it with a spread bet firm, and I think it was only 2 months later, it was a tenner. I think they're £9 now. I've come out of that short, but I made 500 times my stake, which was very nice. So that was a lovely example of a short where the company was fairly obviously overvalued to me at the time, even though I really like the company and I use it. I think it's a great company.
So did you put a stop loss in place for Betfair then?
Yes, but it's when you're betting on a share to go down, obviously the stop loss is the other way. Your stop loss is if it goes if it goes higher.
Right.
So if I'd gone into my, I don't know what it was, but when I went in to short it or to bet on it to go down from £15, my stop loss would probably have been at something like £16.50. So my maximum loss would have been 150 points.
Because really, when you're betting on a share going down, your losses could be unlimited because the share price could actually go in the opposite direction.
Yes. So say there was a bid for the share and it goes up £4, yes. You suddenly lost 400 times your stake. But again, a stop loss would take you out. But the very important thing for people to understand is there's two different stop losses. One is a normal stop loss. That doesn't get you out overnight if the share tumbles 50p because there was a profits warning.
Why is that?
Because they don't charge you any extra spread for the stop loss. It's okay. Just a normal stop loss. And what the bookie's saying is we'll get you out at whatever price we can in the morning. So if the share was £1 Monday night, there's a profits warning overnight, the share is now 50p, they'll get you out 50p, not at your stop loss, which might have been, say, 80p. But guaranteed stop, they will, because it's called guaranteed stop loss. But when you bought the share originally, they'd have charged you an extra point on the spread. So it does cost you.
So exceeding your normal stop loss is what they call a gap.
Exactly, yes. The share gaps down.
Yeah.
That's what people sometimes get upset about. They go, the so-and-sos didn't get... It's all their fault. People tend to blame the spread bet firms.
Yeah.
I'm no apologist for them, but when I get emails, it's usually their fault. You've just got to understand what you're getting into when you take out your bet. And the other thing people don't understand is how much they're putting on, because it's not I'm buying 10 grand's worth of a share or 5 grand. You're buying pounds per point. But actually, it's so simple. It's unbelievable, because £10 a point is the same as 1,000 shares. So if your share price is £1 and you're putting £10 a point on, you're buying £1,000 worth of shares. It's exactly the same as £1,000. So £20 a point is 2,000 shares. You just work out what your exposure is, because people say to me, oh, yeah, I put on £5 a point or £10 a point. I say, well, what was the price of the share? Well, I don't know about that. I was just... If it's a £10 share, you're putting on 10 grand. If it's a £1 share, you're putting on a grand. If you haven't got 10 grand, don't... I have people come to me and go, oh, I've got £10 a point on the Dow. And I'm going, yeah, you crazy? I wouldn't have £10 a point. That's about £100 million worth of shares. You're nuts.
Okay. Now, there are some conspiracy theorists out there who...
Of course.
Well, there always are, but there are some conspiracy theorists out there who say that spread betting firms deliberately stop people out of their trades. Now, have you seen any evidence of this?
I've been to two firms. I went to IG and I went to Trade Fair, which is owned by London Capital Group. Both gave me unfettered access to the trading desks, and I can tell you there was no guy in there with like a hat and a cigarette going, right, oh, David Quo's got this bet on, right, let's push the price down to get him out of that bet. Ah, oh, he's lost money again, let's push the price back up again, just to get him out.
The thing you're saying is, this doesn't happen?
No, I didn't see right. it at all. But there obviously is market manipulation everywhere you look,
yeah.
even though it's illegal. There's people trying to manipulate prices all the time to their own benefit. So that's why your stop losses, that's why you've got to be very careful where you place your stop loss. It's not that the spread bet firm is necessarily trying to get you out. The other reason why a spread bet firm will be foolish to try and get you out is they should want you to win, because they should simply make money out of every trade you make. And so, because losers are no good to them. What's the point of a loser? You'll get bored and you won't spread bet anymore, so they can't make any money out of you. So actually, the people that they probably would struggle with are the odd very clever person who I think is what's called scalp, I think it's called. They mm-hmm. try and get the odd point here or there, and the bookie can't put that same bet on, so the bookie's really losing. But if you're a big winner with a bookie, it's fine. They shouldn't close you down. You'll be IG Index won't close you down if you're winning £300,000 or £400,000. It's fine. No problem.
Now, you mentioned that at the beginning of the day's trading, shares... prices tend to be a bit more volatile. Are there any other times of the day when spread bettors should be aware that prices could be very volatile?
Yes. 1:30.
Did you just make that up?
No. The reason I say 1:30 is 1:30 is when there's... In America, this is where their big economic announcements come out.
So I just thought it was the time that you go for lunch.
Well, I'm at lunch most of the day, right, if I can. 1:30... Well, for example, between 10 o'clock and 1, I'm doing other things. I'm not even at my desk. I shan't tell you what those are, David, but my wife will probably explain to you. Anyway, so 1:30, we have the mistakes, and that tends to drive the FTSE. Sometimes it goes bananas if they're, I don't know, it's all kinds of weird. I'm not an economist. I don't even understand it, but something like farm roll producer prices.
Okay, right.
Things
okay.
that aren't too stupid to understand it. And suddenly there's a big
I'm sure you do understand what they are. Yeah.
No idea. And then the FTSE will go down 60, because the Dow Jones is then scheduled to open up or down at 230 by. And then if you've got FTSE 100 shares in particular, they can go completely bananas. But I very rarely use spread betting for FTSE 100 shares, because I'm not interested in the volatility. I'm interested, actually, a lot of my spread betting is being able to buy smaller companies which are on the AIM market, and I can't buy them in my ISA tax-free. So I use spread betting as a tool to make sure everything I do is tax-free, because AIM shares aren't allowed in tax-free ISAs.
So are you saying people should embrace volatility then? Is volatility good for spread bettors or bad for spread bettors?
Depends what kind of spread better you are. The reason most people lose is spread betting is they simply trade too much.
Can you explain that?
Yes, because... and I've talked to the spread firms as well. I think they bear me out that actually the more people trade, the more they lose, because they're just simply putting on... They can't control their bets. They're going crazy. They're sitting there all day putting on a bet, sell the footsie, buy the footsie. In effect, they're kind of just like gambling. It's a bit like placing money in a horse.
Is what spread betting is all about, though, Robbie. No, that's why it's called spread betting. It is gambling.
Well, it depends who you are. I mean, the fact that we know that at least 80% of people lose, yes, absolutely. People go in and it's just... Actually, a lot of what my book is warning people against this. And if, in fact, you're right, if you have a tendency to gambling, if you're a gambler and you start losing your money on the horses, I would avoid spread betting completely, because it's very addictive.
Yeah.
It can pull you in. And in fact, I had somebody who came to a seminar of mine 3-4 weeks ago. He nearly lost his marriage. He nearly lost his house. He went crazy and kept buying this one share. He kept spread betting it. He bought it at £5. It went to £4. He bought more at £3. He bought more at £2. Got obsessed with the share. He bought more at £1. He didn't care. You know, he owed the spread betting firm loads of money. They were phoning him up. You know, he wasn't answering the phone anymore. And, you know, his wife was asking, you know, he was asking his wife for money, his friends for money. It's a terrible story. And he was very, very lucky in the fact the shares started going back up and he got a lot of his money back. But he that was desperate. And what happens if you lose a lot of money? Spread betting firms then turn nasty and they'll start phoning you and going, where's our money? We want it now. They're not going to wait for next week. You're supposed to stump up the money right now. Don't go in over your head, and that's what a lot of people do. They haven't got the money and they go in over their head, and that's an aspect of spread betting which you have to be wary of.
So what kind of shares or assets or indices are best for spread bettors?
It really depends. The way I use spread betting is, in the main, it's for buying smaller AIM companies so I can get them tax-free. But also, when things go badly, like in 2008, 2009, the FTSE was going down, I shorted the FTSE because it gave me money coming in to my accounts. So I think, I can't remember what I had now, but say you had a £10 a point short of the FTSE. Every point the FTSE goes down, you make a tenner. And again, you can use a stop loss to lock your winners in. And so I think, I don't know how much it went down, but it was a good 1,000 points. So if you had a £10 a point, you'd have made 10 grand on it. And the mistake I actually made was I overdid it. I kept shorting the FTSE, but kept taking profits too early. And again, if I just let the short roll on, I would actually make a lot more money on my short. So overall, I would say my mistakes in the past have been probably trading too much coming in and out. And the more that I do it, the more I learn to hold my position. If something like a Greco we were talking about, if it's a great share and you've got a great spread bet on it, ignore the volatility, you can go out for weeks. I went to Florida for 2 weeks, didn't look at it once. My stop loss was well away, and I come back, it's a bit higher, and hopefully in 3 or 4 years' time, it'll be 25 quid. And I might still have that spread bet open. That's fine. And I'll take the profit when it comes. But spread betting sites, to me, are very much designed to make you press the button, because every time you press the button, the bookie should make money. It's in their interests to ensure that their spread betting sites are very addictive. And the one thing I would never do would be going in and buying the FTSE here, selling the FTSE there. I don't know if the FTSE is going to go up or down, so I steer clear of it.
So paint me the picture of a typical spread bettor's day. What would a spread bettor be doing first thing in the morning when he gets onto his computer?
Well, I think this is tricky, because I would say that right now I'm not your average typical spread bettor. What about we do a spread bettor who's going crazy? And
okay, yeah. That sounds good. That sounds very dramatic, yes.
Who's getting it wrong.
It makes for good podcasting, this, yes, okay.
Well, you know, okay, so he's decided he's going to become a full-time trader, which to his mind is he's got to make at least 10 or 15 trades, because I'm a full-time trader. I've got to make 10 or 15 trades a day. He wants to get in. So 8 o'clock, he's in on his machine. It looks good today, so he might go in and buy the FTSE, and then buy the FTSE again, and then he might go in and buy, BT looks good. He's not thinking very clearly about what he's doing, except he wants to trade. His palms are probably sweaty, he's all emotional, he's all excited. Every time anything goes up a point or two, he's really excited one way or the other. Am I going to make money or lose money today? And that's the losing spread bettor. But that would be quite a high proportion of the people that lose. From talking to the spread bettor firms, the people that lose are the people that trade too much, that overtrade, that overdo it. And people that get too greedy, very interesting story that when I went in was a guy came in, put 10 grand in his account, and I think it was only 2 months later he had $250,000. I went, oh, wow, great. Can't believe it. He did well. Well, yes, said Spreadbetter firm, but 6 weeks later he owed us 40 grand. I said, well, how can he have lost $250,000 so quickly? He said he got greedy. He used the leverage. Now with 250 grand in his account, he had access to buying 4 or 5 million quid's worth of trades, which he did. He suddenly had 5 million and everything went down and he lost all his money. So typical spread better has got this terrible fear, greed thing going on. And so if he makes money, he starts to lose it again. The whole point of it is he's overtrading. Me, I probably won't make a trade in the day at all. I don't think I've made a spread bet trade for a couple of weeks now because everything's going, it's gradually going up nicely. My stop losses are in place. I'm very happy. So I wouldn't be in there all day pressing buttons. And I'll say to anybody listening, if you're there feeling sweaty, getting excited or whatever, I'm talking about spread betting, not those dodgy channels you might be watching when your wife's gone to bed. But you know, if you feel like you're...
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Sure, I'm sure you haven't. That's not what you mentioned before we started the podcast. But anyway, obviously we'll keep that private between us because what you get up to, David, obviously in your private life, that's just to remain. And I'd hate you to get an injunction out against me. But you're safe with me. I won't release the details. So,
Where were we?
I'm lost as well. I can't remember your last question.
Okay, so the trouble I have understanding spread betting is this, Robbie. Now, if I am a small-time spread better and I have £5,000 in my account and I put £5,000 in there and I decide to trade at £1 a point. Now, are you saying that person should be the same as somebody else who's got £50,000 in their account and they should also be trading at £1 a point rather than to be trading £10 a point because he's got 10 times more capital to play with than the guy who's only got 5,000 in his account?
Oh no, I think if you got 50,000, then you're obviously sensible for your stakes to be higher than a pound a point.
But isn't that the whole point behind that guy that you said who started off with a small sum of money, built it up to 250,000? Isn't he right to start scaling up his bets because he's actually got more money to play around with now?
Ah, no, you've got to have the money in the bank to cover, so you've got to have money separated out. So what the guy who lost the money, he should have taken some of the profits out and taken it out of his spread betting account. So when he got to his $250,000, instead of saying, right, I can now buy 5 million quid's worth of shares, he should have banked maybe 100,000 of that, taken it out. So he had 150 left in his spread betting account, 100 grand in the bank. Now he can raise his stakes a little because he's got the money, he's taken the money out and banked it, and he can raise his stakes a little bit higher. What people do is, as the money grows in their spread betting account, they get more, I get smug, cocky.
Okay.
And so they keep raising their stakes, whereas what they should do, and what I try and do, banks on the profits, don't leave it in your spread betting account.
Because otherwise you're going to lose it all.
Not necessarily, but you're tempting yourself to get greedy and you're tempting yourself to raise stakes on money that you don't really have. Because again, in effect, you're being loaned it.
So give me some idea, Robbie, of the person who is best suited to spread betting. I have to confess that I've never spread bet in my life. I've always gone long on shares. Even when I saw the stock market going down, I just kept on adding money to my portfolio because I knew that at some point the stock market would turn. And sure enough, it did. And so therefore, I was buying shares constantly, taking advantage of cheaper and cheaper prices. You, on the other hand, were somebody who took advantage of the market going down and you thought, I can make money on the downward movement of the shares. And you did as well. Now, both of us have probably sort of come out probably about evens because I kept on buying on the way down and now I have a portfolio that is looking quite healthy. I didn't take any risks whatsoever. You did. So what is the best person suited to spread betting? Because clearly I'm not. You are. So what is the difference between the two of us apart from the fact that I have a full head of hair and you don't?
Let me see. There seems to be a few gaps coming, I'm afraid, in there. Also, it looks a bit unhygienic. Actually,
so between the two of us, you like spread betting, I don't.
Well, I'm spread betting is part of an overall, it's part of an overall strategy to make money. But you probably don't buy any smaller companies, do you?
Or, I don't know. I'm strictly FTSE 100.
Yeah, I'm strictly non-FTSE 100 because I like buying under-discovered shares. Like I mentioned, Dialight last time, £3. It's now £8.
I know, it's done very well. I was quite so astounded by that.
I've built up a massive spread bet in Dialight, all the way from, I think, £1, £1.50. So that's nice tax-free money. But say, there's quite a lot of quite big AIM shares out there now that are worth £200 or £300 million, companies that you might even be interested in. But they're AIM. I'm in for capital gains tax if I start to make a decent profit on them. Yeah. With a spread bet, I don't have to worry about capital gains tax. And once you've got a quite big portfolio and a lot of money, actually capital gains tax is already quite hard. So without my spread betting, I would have paid, I can't think about it, but it would have been a fortune in tax every year, and I would be paying a fortune. For example, I'll give you one company that's an AIM share that's quite a good company, quite a big one, called Kentz, K-E-N-Z.
Mm-hmm.
That was £1.50, which I've been buying on spread bets. It's now £4.50. Now, I couldn't buy it in my ISA.
Yeah.
If I bought it outside the ISA, I'd be facing a big, right now, because the tax year's ended, and because I've taken some profits along the way, I'd owe a big tax bill. To the joys of spread betting, I haven't got that tax bill.
So can somebody both be a long investor, such as myself, and spread bet at the same time?
Absolutely. You could be, if you're a long only, it's fine. You don't have to short the spread bet. You could, especially if you come up against a share that you like that's in AIM. And there's a number of shares that are quite big that would almost be in the FTSE 100 that actually are in AIM that you would have to pay tax on. So you could use spread betting, to take your example, and you're a long-term holder. You could simply use spread betting in that way. And there's not much in it over... How long do you hold your shares forever?
I do hold them forever. How did you know?
It just seemed that kind of, you know...
That boring type of person.
No, boring is good. You know, you've got a very expensive shirt on there. You've obviously got, I don't know how much the Motley Fool pay you, but probably you make quite a lot on the side from share dealing, hopefully, and... that's great. And actually, the spread betting firms will tell you that the longer term holders are the ones that win more than the shorter. And your trading strategy is absolutely quite right. Is you're doing the classic thing which people get the wrong way, and you're buying at the height of fear, haven't you? You've bought most of your shares at the height of fear when it's all going down, so you're getting great prices. And the best time to sell is when everyone's smug and think they're king of the universe.
Yep.
And this is what everybody gets wrong. That's probably why 70 or 80% of people lose, because When everyone's scared, everybody sells at the same time. That's the great, perfect time to buy a bug. But you can do that with spread betting as well as... plus, you get the dividends with a spread bet. Different firms play it different ways, but you do get credits on your dividends with your spread bet as well.
Okay.
And you can hold the spread bet for as long as you like. You can hold it for 3 or 4 years. But generally, with a spread bet, every 3 months, they close your bet and reopen it. So you pay a little bit every 3 months just to hold it open. So it just costs a bit more after, say, 6 months. It might cost you a bit more, but not so much as it really matters. If you've got a great share, like Aggreko, the extra cost doesn't matter to me because it's fine.
Are there any situations that you can see where somebody might be long on a particular share? In other words, holding that share for the long term, such as, say, Unilever, which I've held for donkey's years, and at the same time put a spread bet on it falling?
People do that. That would blow my brain. I can't go long and short something at the same time. I haven't got that. People do it. Some people are just looking for a bit of short-term gain. I think hedge fund managers do it, don't they? They have like a pension fund, and then somebody says, I want to borrow some of your shares to short them.
Yeah.
So pension funds lend out their shares for people to short and then give them back or whatever. So a lot of people like short-term shorting. But the reason I don't do it is things happen so quickly that you can get caught out by a big stock market rise very quickly. And the other thing with it is, if you do that with spread betting, you have to beat your computer all the time, because if you're very short term, you have to keep checking the price all the time. And that would drive me bonkers, because being reasonably lazy, I'd rather be doing other things than sitting in front of the computer all day. So, the other thing we should talk about is trailing stop losses with your broker, which just means that you say to yourself, the share price is £5, my trailing stop loss is 50p. So if it comes down 50p off the high, it gets sold automatically. But what happens is it rises with the profits, so you're locking in profit all the time, and your profit is taken on emotionally. You've set where your target is. That's what you want. That's the money you want to make from the share. But if the share carries on going up, like Aggreko, that would still keep going up under the share price very nicely. And then only get closed out. If something really horrible happened to Aggreko, it would get closed out. It would get closed out, but your profit would be banked. And I think these trading stop losses are very, especially if you've got a job and you look at the screen once or twice a week or once or twice a day, it's just a little bit of a comfort blanket or a bit of insurance, and your profit will be locked. And you can always buy the share back again if you got it wrong, but your profit will be locked in to your spread bet account. So I do like trading stops. And they're coming up with things all the time which help, because I think spread bet firms have realised that people are worried about losing all their money. So I think the guaranteed stop loss, if you're starting out, is a great tool, because and would save you over and over again if you buy something that has a profits warning overnight. You can sleep at night and you actually won't lose. Whereas actually, if you'd had it as a share, you would have lost 50%. With the spread bet, you wouldn't have lost 50%. So that's another reason for looking at it. I see you're getting kind of vaguely interested. And you probably never will put a spread bet on, but I just see this...
No, but the big difference between the two, and we have to sort of stress this very carefully, is that you might lose if you were to buy the share outright, you might lose 50% of the money you have in the share, but you still own the share at the end of the day. With a spread bet, you don't anymore because you've actually been stopped out of it and you've actually lost the money. But in my case, if I bought the share and it fell 50%, I still own the physical shares and I can wait for the shares to go back up again. With a spread bet, you can't.
Yes, you don't have to have a stop loss. You could just treat a spread bet as an ordinary... There's no one forcing you to have a stop loss on it. Yeah. Or you could set your stop loss at 80% off if you don't want to get stopped out. Just knock it off. Don't. And in fact, you're quite right. I don't actually personally have stops with some of the smaller AIM companies because I feel that I don't want to get stopped out on the volatile. And I'm pretty certain I'm going to hold on to them 2 or 3 years. So mm-hmm. I either put the stop very low or I'm out of it completely. So you don't have to stop. You can really use spread betting just as you would as a normal account, just as you would normally buy a share. Just use spread betting as normal. There's no commission or stamp duty to pay. Because obviously, being a wealthy man, probably some of your trades are quite big. So I'd imagine your average trade is about 100 grand, isn't it? So stamp duty on that is what? Quite a lot, 500 quid. So with a spread bet, you won't have to pay that 500 quid. So I can see, you know, you're still dubious, but I can see gradually, you may be warming to it gradually. I'm trying to think how else I can persuade you, really. The one thing that people do badly, I think, is they decide I'm going to trade currencies. They like Forex, really gets people going. I don't know why, especially blokes love the word Forex, which is trading on currencies. And they tell me 99% of people lose on Forex. So why? I get people emailing going, I want to get into Forex. I'm going, well, I'll go, good luck, enjoy the losses, and have fun.
Because they want to be that 1% that actually makes the money.
I think what they like, what a lot of blokes like, is stuff that goes up and down quickly. They want a quick fix. Is what people do, and I think that's where the gambling addiction could come in.
So why do people lose money on Forex trading then?
I think it's so volatile that I don't know, I have no idea how it goes up or down myself, but I think it's they just overdo it.
Yeah.
And they just want to make a few quick points here or there, and they don't. I think what they do is also, if you look at magazines and stuff, you see tons of adverts for Forex systems and Forex. People, everyone out there, you walk down the street, somebody will sell you a Forex system which will definitely make you money. David, my system will make you money. If you like to give me $5,000 plus VAT, here's my system. You're going to make loads of money on Forex. Definitely. Just don't phone me when you start losing and ask for your money back for the system because I can't give you a refund.
And you're saying that these systems don't really work?
I don't believe so, no. I don't think any systems work is my viewpoint. I think good common sense, a little bit of detective work, and what you do, which is buy on extreme fear days at good prices and hold on to them. But you can do that with spread betting just as you can with other things. And I think I've had Dialight open for a year and a half on a spread bet.
Okay.
No problem. And that just keeps going, and I'll hold it until I think it's overvalued. The other thing is, with your keen mind and your analysing of companies, is there is money to be made from shorting. For example, Yell.com. I made a lovely load of money. I think I shorted it at 60p. It had a debt of half the gross national product of Britain. I think it made about 10 or 20 million and it had a debt of 4 billion. What's not to hate about Yell? I mean, it was just a short all the way down. I think it's 9p now or 10p, but you could have made 60 times your stake with a lot. And if you can find a company that goes bust on you and you're short of it, fantastic. You've made tons of money. Even better, say you'd shorted Northern Rock or any of those banks when they were at 6 quid or Barclays and they're 6 quid. During that time when everyone was panicking, you'd have made an absolute fortune shorting. At the top of the... So you could argue, when you think everybody's smug and it's the top of the markets, this is a great time to go short and you can make money on shares going down. And it feels it feels quite nice. I don't know why. It's like you've made money on something going down. Some people, though, say burn the shorters and the shorters are accused of driving the markets down. I don't tend to agree with that. I think they actually provide quite a lot of liquidity to the market, so I don't necessarily subscribe to the view that... The shorters are. I think nowadays when somebody's share goes down a half, it's not I got it wrong or the company's crap. It's the shorters did it. It's all their fault. But people always blame everybody else. If somebody loses money, it's always everybody else's fault, not their fault. It happens. So, in fact, somebody sent me an email and I wrote them back. They were expecting me to agree with them. I said, actually, it's your fault. You lost money. And the next email I got was a complete heap of abuse using words which I couldn't possibly say here. But I obviously touched a nerve. It was his fault. If you lose money in the market, you haven't done your research anymore. Yeah. You haven't, you know, it's your fault, not anybody else's. So with spread betting, you can buy good, strong companies like you do and hold on to them and make money tax-free.
And if somebody was interested, this is my final question, if somebody was interested in setting up spread betting, and I'm not here promoting spread betting, but if somebody were interested in doing so, how many spread bets should they have on at any one time?
Oh, my goodness me. I personally wouldn't have more than probably 12, I would say, would be my max.
Right.
My maximum. Yes, 12 bets is good. The other thing I think to say is that actually spread betting, the spreads have got quite tight because there's so many spread betting firms competing that actually it's pretty good value now. The little extra spread they charge you isn't that much anymore. So it's getting to the stage where there's not an awful lot in it between just buying a share in the market. And you could transfer all your shares into spread betting and you could just trade as normal and probably make as much money as you do already, David. So,
you're desperately trying to get me to go over to the dark side, aren't you? I am a long-only investor and you're trying to drag me over into the lion's den.
No, you can be a long-term...
And say, you can cuddle this lion in the corner there. He is not going to maul you.
No, I think if you bought your favoured Unilever, you buy as a spread bet, you'll still make money on a spread bet as you would with a normal share. You could buy $5,000 worth of Unilever with a spread bet. If it goes up, you'll make your money. There's no problem at all. So, all tax-free as well.
I am almost tempted now.
I don't think you are, really, but it's fair enough, you know. But I have to say, for me, it's been fantastic, and I've made money out of it, and I'm very happy with spread betting. And being somebody who's really, actually, I'm not really long-term like you, but I'm medium-term, and I think if you're a medium-term investor, you can make money out of spread betting. I think if you're a long-term investor, you can make money out of spread. But actually, funnily enough, I think if you are a short-term crazy gambler, you'll probably lose.
That's not me.
That's not you. No, we know.
I'm not short-term, nor am I crazy, nor am I a gambler.
Okay, well, I believe you, David. Yes.
Okay. Now, I have a couple of housekeeping chores to take care of before we end. The first housekeeping chore is to give away some copies of your book. And your book is called The Naked Trader's Guide to Spread Betting, How to Make Money from Shares in Up or Down Markets. Now, in order to win a copy of this book, you have to give me the answer to this very, very simple question. The question is, Robbie Burns is known as the Naked Trader. Can you tell me who is the Naked Chef, please? And please email your answers to moneytalk@fool.co.uk for your chance to win a copy of this book. You know the answer to that.
Yes, I'm going to. it's a bit of a good morning UK type question, isn't it? Because everybody knows the answer. But I suppose that's...
I want to give away copies of your book. I'm not going to ask people tough questions.
It's true. I brought 5 copies with me today as well, so which I had to lug on the tube, so I'm quite glad to get rid of them, to be honest.
Now,
so, yeah.
Now, I have
is
just...
it Rolf, is the answer Rolf Harris?
No, it's not Rolf Harris. No. Now, I have just one more chore, and that is to find a quote to sum up today's podcast. And today's quote comes from a professional gambler, believe it or not, and his name is VP Pappy. What a great name. And VP Pappy said, "If you aren't just a little scared when you enter a casino, you are either very rich or you haven't studied the games enough."
Very good quote, and that's quite apposite of spread betting as well, actually, isn't it? It's the same kind of thing.
And that is why you need a copy of Robbie Burns's book, so that you can be up on the games that are being played in the spread betting market.
I hope so.
Now, thank you very much for coming in today, Robbie. It's been an absolute delight as ever. Before you go, have you got another book coming out? So you have some excuse to come back into this office.
You asked me to plug another book. That's pretty impressive. Yeah, Naked Trader 3 should be out in September or October, which is an update, fairly obviously, to Naked Trader 2.
Just in time for Christmas.
Yes. Put it in your partner's Christmas stocking. Actually, it's quite a big book, so maybe not. You might just tear the bottom of the stocking, so I'd be a bit careful about that. But that updates a bit, and also the reason I wrote Naked Trader 3 was to talk about the down markets and what happens when things go bad. Obviously, if you're David Kuo, you actually buy shares. If you're me, you might buy, but you might just do a bit of shorting as well, using spread betting.
And can I just ask whether or not this lovely lady on the front cover of your book
will
be...
Do you know what? I knew you were going to come up with this. You're obsessed with this.
Lovely...
You've been staring at her throughout the whole of this podcast. That's, you know, and that's why you've lost the thread of some of your questions.
No, is this lovely lady going to be appearing in your third book then?
I reckon she probably will be appearing in the third book, yes.
She is absolutely amazing. I'll tell you why, because she hasn't aged at all.
She's incredible. She's ageless. There's probably lots of Botox going in there.
She is completely ageless. So, yeah. And she is wearing less and less each time, I've noticed.
It's funny that, isn't it? That's called marketing, but nothing to do with me. You'll have to contact my publisher on that one.
And so when your 20th book comes out,
Well, I'll probably be taking that euthanasia ride we were discussing earlier by then, I think. So, yes.
Okay, once
she'll,
again.
She'll be there, yes.
What's her name, by the way?
I've no idea at all.
Don't you?
If you want me to put you in touch, then it probably can be arranged for a small fee.
Okay, thank you very much.
I'll take 100 quid plus VAT.
Thank you very much. Now, this has been Money Talk. I have been David Quoyle. My guest has been Robbie Burns, author of Naked Trader's Guide to Spread Betting. If you have a comment about today's show, please let me know on the Money Talk webpage, which you can find at fool.co.uk. And until next week, happy trading.